A lot of people have joined Healed Being. It's the program that I run for emotionally abusive people who want to change. And it's not because they're bad people. It's actually because they're good people who have poor coping mechanisms, don't know how to regulate or control their emotional triggers, and really want to stop hurting those they love. If this is something that you think you may need, head over to healedbeing.com and sign up for the free trial, healedbeing.com. Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hey, this is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you learn to deal with difficult people, tackle life's challenges without compromising who you are, and navigate through the problems. Navigate through all the challenges we have in life, and that's the thing I do every week. I'm so glad you're here. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. And I'm just going to start right off and say to the person who wrote and said that her husband cheated on her with a much, much older woman, I'm going to tell you this. I'm not going to read her message. I'm not going to tell you what she wrote in the email. I'm just going to say that she did say, what I can share with you, is that she wants to get past it. She wants to get over it. She wants to get past this, these feelings and these emotions and these thoughts that she's having. And he has cut off ties, feels guilty, feels awful, doesn't know why he did it, stopped drinking. He's made every possible change that I think you can make after some sort of regretful behavior. Do I believe he's regretful? It sounds like he is. I can only assume he is from what she described, but of course I don't know. But this is part of the problem when it comes to infidelity, is you really don't know how regretful they are, because why did they do that in the first place? So there's a conflict in your mind when somebody betrays you, when somebody cheats on you. And that conflict is, why would they cheat on me if they loved me? Why would they cheat on me if they were an honest person? And then when it's found out, whether they admit it or they're caught or whatever, then the conflict is, they can't be an honest person. Therefore, how can I believe that they regret it? It's not honest what they did. Their cheating is not honest. It's a betrayal, and they hid the facts. They hid the truth. So therefore, why should I believe them now? That's the conflict. And so it's very difficult to get past a conflict like that, that inner conflict that is fighting. You know, you have these two thought processes fighting with each other inside of you. One thought process is, yeah, but he's so sincere and he loves me. And the other thought process is, yeah, but he betrayed me. And I'm sure there may be other thought processes going on there. Why did this happen? What did I do wrong? There's another one. Another fight, another conflict inside yourself. What did I do that caused this? Some people feel that way. Some people don't. Some people blame themselves when somebody betrays them. Let me just ease your mind, if that's you. You don't have to blame yourself when somebody betrays you, because they're doing it of their own volition, of their own free will. They're making a conscious decision to do it. Even if you were the worst person in the world in their life, they're still making a conscious decision to do it as an adult. I'm not really talking about relationships with young teens. I'm talking about when we're adults and we get into relationships, and the person betrays us in some way or lies, then we have to consider that they are doing it consciously. And they can look back at you and say, well, I wouldn't have cheated if you didn't do X, Y, Z. I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have betrayed you. I wouldn't have lied to you if you hadn't done that. That's a very unfortunate, common deflection. But that deflection of blame shifting, you know, I'm blaming you for my behavior. I'm blaming you for my conscious choice, the one that I concocted in my own head, the one that I came up with and then took action on that decision that I made, I'm going to blame you for. So that decision that they made is not your fault. It's theirs, no matter what you did. But what if I cheated? Well, there's one, right? What if I cheated? What if I betrayed them and I didn't mean it and I regret it and now I feel guilty and I feel ashamed and now we're working on it. Them cheating because you cheated is still a conscious decision that they make because they're choosing to do something that they believe is an eye for an eye. And that doesn't matter though. If they're choosing that, if they're choosing an eye for an eye, then they are essentially doing the same thing that you did if you were the cheater, which creates an even worse scenario. Then, you know, I have some thoughts about this, like, oh, they cheated, so you can cheat too. But I think that should be discussed. If you're going to cheat on somebody that cheated on you, say, look, you cheated on me, so I'm going to cheat on you. That should be discussed. Of course, who does that? Who talks about that? Maybe some people do. But because you did this, I'm going to do it. The challenge is that a lot of people who are honest and sincere and genuine in their relationship won't cheat. So it's going to be hard for the person who got betrayed to go out and betray because maybe they aren't the type that betrays. Maybe they aren't the type that lies. So that'll be hard for them to do. But maybe they want to get revenge or show them how much it hurts and whatever. It's a very complicated situation when it gets that far. In my personal opinion, and maybe professional opinion, I think when one person betrays, it shouldn't be an eye for an eye. It should be the person who is the victim of that betrayal has to decide if they are going to move forward in the relationship or leave. Are they going to put effort into that relationship or are they not? And they're going to reject the idea that the relationship can continue, which in turn means they're going to leave the relationship because they won't be able to accept what happened. They won't be able to accept that person's behavior and they can't, or they don't believe they can ever trust that person again. So that happens too. But that is coming to a decision. Coming to a decision of what do I want for me? Instead of saying, what am I going to do to them? What am I going to do for myself? How am I going to honor myself now that I know this? So I didn't really answer the person's question yet. So the person said, how am I going to get past this? How do I forgive and forget? Or how do I move on and feel good inside myself? Well, number one, read my article on infidelity. It's going to be very helpful. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, type in the word infidelity in the search field, and you'll see one called Surviving Infidelity. And when you read that, you'll understand what needs to happen. Both people need to heal if the relationship is to move forward. But that article is going to be very helpful. And number two is the relationship cannot possibly go on as it was. Hear me out. The relationship cannot possibly go on with the same two people that entered it. That means you both have to change. That means the person who cheated has to change. They can't be recognizable as the old person they were. If the old person they were was the type of person that says, no, you can't touch my phone, the new person says, absolutely, here's my phone. If the old person says, I'm going to be late for work and I don't want you calling me because I'll be working late, the new person says, I'm going to be late for work, but you can come by, you can call, whatever you need to do, because I'm going to be there working. The person changes, the betrayer, the infidel, changes completely, hardly recognizable as the new person, completely honest, completely transparent, has no problem showing their partner anything they want to see ever. For as long as it takes. As long as it takes for the partner to start trusting again. And just that's how it is. That's the new person. And the person who was the victim to that betrayal also has to change not so much as their partner, but so much so that they are now not afraid to bring things up. Where were you? Why did it take so long? Who are you talking to? Because if that stuff wasn't said before, it needs to be said now. There needs to be nothing swept under the rug. There needs to be nothing like denial. There needs to be no denial on the victim's part, because there can't be anything left unsaid, and there can't be any what I call open loops. Nothing is open, no unfinished business. We need to close every loop. So if there's a suspicion that comes up, you bring it up. I have this feeling. I have this thought. I want to talk about it. And the victim of that behavior, of that person's behavior, is going to be different in that respect. Most of the time, the victim of that kind of behavior doesn't have to change too much, but there are very specific qualities and very specific things that that person should start doing differently. And when they get an answer, it's okay to have a conversation that doesn't feel finished, or continue a conversation that doesn't feel finished. So if the other person says, well, I was just late, you know, there was a lot of traffic. If that doesn't feel good to the person who asked it, then it's okay to continue that conversation, because the person who betrayed, the person who cheated, should be willing to share everything that the other person wants to know. They should be ready, willing, and able, and totally okay, no resistance, telling everything that the other person wants to hear. That has to last a while. That's how it goes. It might go up to a year or more, but that's how it goes. And so to the person who wrote that to me, you said he was doing all the right things now. This is a matter of rebuilding trust. You have to rebuild trust. And in order to rebuild trust, you need to see the good behaviors, the positive steps forward, the change in behaviors, the change in what they do over and over and over again. You need to see it for yourself so that you can finally tell yourself, yes, I'm starting to see that they really are serious and they really feel bad and they regret it. And their promises of never doing it again and them cutting off contact is exactly what I need. And I need that to continue. And as long as it continues, I will continue feeling better. Now, the victim of that behavior needs to know when they'll be convinced. This is the part three and the last part of this. The victim of betraying behavior, where the betrayer now says, I'm sorry, I'm ashamed, I feel bad, and they mean it. They've apologized and they mean it. And they want to work on the relationship and you want to work on the relationship. The victim of that behavior needs to know what it takes to be convinced. And what I mean by that is, how many times do you need to see XYZ behavior before you're convinced? That is a great question, because if you don't have the answer, you'll be stuck in limbo. The answer might be, I need to see it at least 100 times. I need to know that if he hands his phone over 100 times with no resistance, I can finally start trusting him again. I think it's important to come up with some sort of number, even though it might be difficult to do that at the beginning. But I think it's important to have some sort of guideline or gauge in your head that says, when this happens X many times, I'll be mostly there, or I'll be convinced. If this happens 10 times, no resistance, and every time I ask him where he is, he tells me no problem, then I can start to trust again. Where the problem lies in relationships that don't think this way, like the victim doesn't think about when they'll be convinced, instead they just keep working on it every day, hoping that their mind will change and they'll feel better. What ends up happening often, not always, but what ends up happening is that the victim doesn't know when to stop doing what they're doing. So if the victim sees that their partner turned up as trustworthy with no resistance and being honest and transparent, if they don't think, well, next time I'll feel better, or in 20 more times, I'll feel better. If they don't think that way, then they may never get there. They may never get to the point where they start to trust again. So I think that's important to know your limits, know how many times you need to see something before you believe it. I mean, like caring for an animal. How many times do you need to pet it before you know it's not going to bite you? I'll use that analogy. Sometimes we get a rescue dog or something, and that rescue dog may have been hurt or abused, and we don't know where it is inside its head, but how many times can we pet it before we finally trust that it trusts us so that it doesn't bite us? That is a good way to look at it. If you say, well, if I do it 50 times, then I'll probably feel pretty safe. I'll be able to have recognized all the nonverbal signals, and I'll be able to see the dog's reaction and his mannerisms, and I won't be afraid after, you know, so many times. I mean, it doesn't have to be an exact number. It just has to be in the back of your head. Like, okay, last time I did this, this is the reaction I got. This time I do this, this is the reaction I get. I wore this perfume and he didn't get, you know, crazy on me. And I'm just going through the motions until I can trust this dog will not hurt me. Now, that doesn't mean it won't hurt anyone else, but it is a good gauge for you so that you know when it's time to completely trust. Doesn't mean that a wild animal or a hurt animal will never attack or something like that. It happens, but we have to do our best going forward with trust, because otherwise we'll just be skittish all the time or paranoid. And this is the same thing in relationships. If you're in a relationship with someone, it's no fun being skittish or paranoid or worried all the time that they're going to do something that you don't like or will be against the boundaries of the relationship. It's no fun. We don't want to live like that. So that's why it's helpful to think in a way where you consider what will be enough before you can say, I now trust this person. That doesn't mean the trust is all the way at 100%, but if you can get to a point where it's pretty high and you can feel good about yourself and you can feel good with them, then I think you can move on to the next phase of the relationship. And again, the relationship isn't the same as it was. It cannot be. I see this in emotionally abusive relationships where the emotionally abusive person comes back into the relationship and everything is hunky-dory for 2 months. And then suddenly the old behavior comes back. And not only does the old behavior come back, but the old reactions to that behavior come back too. The victim of those behaviors starts to have all those old reactions again. And nothing changes. I mean, it goes back to the way it was. And now you're back to square one again in the same situation. That's why both people need to change. Because if the victim sees the old behaviors coming out, something needs to be said, or the victim needs to do something else with their life, make changes that don't include someone that believes they're allowed to do those things in the relationship. So I hope this helps the person that wrote to me, and I know it's difficult. It's very difficult. I don't know how I could handle my partner cheating on me. I wouldn't. Just listen to what I say. Don't do what I do. I wouldn't be able to handle it. Because, well, let me put it this way. We've built a lot of trust with each other. We've talked about everything. We've been transparent with each other. We've been very honest about everything. And so when that happens and you have that kind of trust and you believe that it couldn't get any better as far as communication and connection, and then suddenly one person cheats when you have everything that good, that's very difficult to get past. Some people can do it. I don't know if I could. I don't know if I could get past if she did that. Because how much more could I possibly trust her than I do now? That would be difficult. And people have written to me and said, you know, I had a great relationship and I cheated and I don't know why. And I wanted to ask her more about that and she never wrote back. If you're out there, I want to know. I want to know more about that. Because when you have a great relationship and you cheat, that is a unique situation. Then that relationship may or may not survive depending on the other person. I believe that my partner, my fiance and I talk about all this stuff. So if a problem comes up, and this was established early on in the relationship, if a problem comes up in the relationship, we talk about it. It cannot linger. It cannot be an open loop. It cannot be an unfinished conversation. It has to be complete. Otherwise, it can fester. It can turn into destructive behavior later on, destructive to our psyche, to the relationship itself, to our connection. It needs to be resolved. Are we successful all the time? I can't think of a single incident that we haven't resolved, because we have to come to a point where it's not an interference in the relationship. That doesn't mean we agree on everything. It just means it cannot interfere with the relationship. That might mean, hey, I don't agree with you there, and I definitely have a different opinion, but it doesn't interfere with my love for you, and it doesn't interfere with her love for me, our support of each other, and even our support of our own beliefs doesn't interfere. Now, we're very lucky because we have a lot of similar beliefs and similar values, but there still are issues that come up. You know it, and I know it. So it's important to not have any open loops like that. So again, thank you to that person who wrote that. I hope this helps. I did something that I've never done before in my life, and that is fasting. Fasting for 5 days straight. Now, it wasn't like no food at all. It was the Prolon 5-day program, and it was a game changer. I mean, it transformed how I relate to food. With Prolon, I felt in control and proud of what I accomplished. Prolon is not just a diet, it's a science, the revolutionary plant-based nutrition program that nourishes your body while tricking your cells into thinking they're fasting. Prolon supports healthy blood sugar and cardiovascular health and helps reduce abdominal fat. I did lose 5 pounds. It was great. I mean, imagine snacks, soups, beverages, all designed to help keep your body in a fasting state without feeling like you're missing out. And let me tell you, it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. Thousands of doctors recommend Prolon, and it makes perfect sense. It's convenient, backed by Nobel Prize-winning science, and it works. They sent me everything I needed in one box, making the 5-day journey effortless. I'm the kind of guy that needs someone to spell things out for me to make sure I get it right. And they did. They made it super easy, guiding me the whole way. No confusion. I knew exactly what to do and when. And right now, Prolon is offering the Overwhelmed Brain listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/brain. That's Prolon, P-R-O-L-O-N, life.com/brain. And get this special offer. That's prolonlife.com/brain. The next thing I want to comment on is somebody who wrote something in the Facebook group. They said that it was a convoluted story about their dad being married like 4 times, and he's the first son of the first marriage or something like that. And he's got all these other siblings from all these other marriages. His dad's been busy. But all these siblings, they don't necessarily get along with him, or he doesn't necessarily get along with them. So there are different people that don't get along with each other. And wow, what a mess. I mean, family is what I call the final frontier of personal growth and development, which means if you can face your family as the new you, if you can face the people in your family as the new you, as the person with improved boundaries and improved communication skills and just feeling comfortable in your own skin around them, then you've mastered it. You have mastered personal growth and development to the point where you can face anyone, because family is, they're usually the people that know you best. And if they don't know you best, they've known you the longest. And when they've known you the longest, they think they know you the best. And because they think they know you the best, there's no way you can change for them, because they'll always know you as who you were. Now, that last comment, that last statement I made about you can't change for them is not true, but it feels true. Because when you see family that you maybe didn't get along with before, and now you're a new person with new boundaries and maybe new values and new beliefs, they may not accept it. And if they don't accept it, they're going to treat you the same way they've always treated you. And if they really don't care how you feel and just want to do what they want to do, and maybe even want to control you or make you feel bad, they're not going to be any different toward you, no matter who you are. So this is where the biggest growth takes place. The biggest growth takes place typically with family. With loved ones, you know, partners and stuff like that, that happens too. But family is usually the biggest growth. Like when I learned how to honor my boundaries, the very people that violated those boundaries before showed up. That's another thing that happens, is when you learn something new about yourself and you've improved yourself and evolved in some way, someone will show up to challenge it. And it won't be easy. It was never easy for me when someone showed up and challenged my personal growth and development. When they challenged how good I felt about myself and how good I felt being who I was, the challenge was always very difficult. The challenge was always very difficult because you have history. And when you have history, you're more likely to regress. You're more likely to step back into an earlier version, an earlier form of yourself. And if you step into that form, you're more likely to react or respond the way you used to. I like what Eckhart Tolle said. He said, you really, and I'm very much paraphrasing this, might be screwing it all up, but he said something like, when you can meet your ex, or maybe even a family member that you've had a lot of issues with and a lot of history with, if you can meet them with no history, then you're really present-minded, you're really in the moment, and you are going to have a much different conversation than if you make it or make the meeting all about your history. Oh, we've had all these hard times. Our conversation is going to have a foundation of all those hard times. And because of that, it could spiral downward quickly. So how do I talk to someone with no history? How do I speak to them as if all the bad blood between us didn't happen? It's very difficult. I'm not saying sometimes it's not possible. I'm not saying it is. But I do believe there's a way to get through circumstances like that. With the person who wrote, he said that he has all these siblings from different families. Not all of them get along. But his dad, I think he had a heart attack, and he wants to go see his dad, but he doesn't want to any trouble from the siblings. So I'm not sure if I should go see my dad or not. I don't know what to do. And this is where present moment, present mindedness can be really helpful. This is what I would do. I would focus on what's important to me instead of what I'm afraid of, or what's important to me instead of what might be a problem. So when you think of your dad and being in the hospital, what's important to you? It's important that I see my dad. I really want to see my dad. That's the answer I believe he's going to give. That's important to me. But the big but in there is my siblings might be there. They might cause a ruckus. They might be a problem. How do you stay present for your dad? Because that's your focus. You stay present for the person that is important to you. You show up with your focus on the person you want to see, because he may not be around. And if you didn't see somebody who may not be around because other people might have a problem with you, then your focus was on not causing problems instead of seeing somebody that you may not see again. Now, in his message, he did say his dad's improving, but we never know what's going to happen. We never know what is going to happen tomorrow. That's why it's more important, in my opinion, to focus on what's most important instead of focusing on what we're afraid of. This goes along the line of the question that I came up with a long time ago to ask myself, which was, What would I do if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? When I ask that question, the truth I need to follow always comes out. That is the truth I need to follow. In fact, I would say for the most part, most of us, if we ask that question, what would I do if I had absolutely no fear of the consequences? Whatever comes out of your mouth is your truth, and your truth is usually the right way. That is the path. And, you know, this isn't like I would rob a bank. We don't go there. We're going to an inner truth, something that we're usually afraid of happening, so we don't do it. Like, we don't want to talk to that person, so we change our path. We change our direction, so we don't have to talk to that person. But what would we do if we had no fear of the consequences? Maybe I would talk to that person. Maybe I would just walk by that person and not give them a second thought because my primary focus is this other person. That's who matters. And this is how I stay present-minded. I remember that it's more important to do what's important, to be around the people that are most important, regardless of who's going to be there or what trouble's going to stir up. Now, this doesn't mean that I always make that decision. It doesn't mean that if I know my stepfather's going to show up at so-and-so's house, that I'm just going to automatically go there and just ignore him because I really don't want to see him. I really don't want to see that person. But it wouldn't stop me if there was something very important or someone very important that I wanted to see. Whether he's there or not doesn't matter because I want to see this other person, and that's where my focus will be. And I think that's a good way to live. I think that's a great way to see life. It's a good philosophy to follow, is that when we focus on what's most important and we go in that direction, then anything that's not important, they'll just have to deal with it. Anyone that's not important, they'll just have to deal with it. So when this guy goes to see his dad, I hope he does, then the people that don't like him there will just have to deal with it. He walks in the room and they say, "Oh, what are you doing here? You know, you shouldn't be here. I'm here to see my father." That's it. That's all you have to say. You don't have to explain your actions. You don't have to give him a reason. "I'm here to see my father." "Well, you shouldn't see him," whatever they say, whatever stupid comment they make. "You shouldn't see him because you're a bad son." Okay, that's fine. You have your opinion. I'm just here to see my dad. Sometimes you have to ignore people. Sometimes you have to be a cold gray rock. It's called the gray rock technique. And you're not being emotionally triggered by them because they don't matter. Who matters? Who matters in your life? That's your direction. That's your goal. And I'm not saying it won't go terribly wrong. It could definitely go terribly wrong. But when you look back at the decisions that you made in life, are you going to say, "I'm so glad I did that regardless of how bad it went"? Or are you going to say, "I wish I hadn't done that because there was so much trouble, and missing that time with my dad, I guess, is okay because I avoided that conflict"? These are the things that weigh on us when we're older in life. We were thinking about them, what we could have done, what we should have done, how we should have responded differently. What is your absolute truth? And I think that's a good way to live life. And, you know, pick your battles wisely, of course. And not everyone's going to like the decisions you make, but that's what life is about. We honor ourselves, and we hope that people honor us honoring ourselves. This is what I do with people that don't agree with me. I love them from afar, and I honor them where they are. Because if that's where they need to be and they don't want me in their life, I'll accept that. I may not be happy with that, but I'll accept it. I hope this helps this person and anyone that this applies to. I appreciate you. And thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I'd like to thank our patrons this week, Brad and Ashley and Winnie and Larry and brand new Cheyenne. Thank you for your pronunciation. She told me how to pronounce it, and I'm very grateful for your support. Thank you for joining the program. And Crystal and Angel, I appreciate all of you. They are the financial backers of the show. I call them patrons, and I read new names every week, patrons of the week. they valued the show and decided to give back, and that is an option for you too. If you want to give back, you can head over to moretob.com, and there are options to do that over there. Thank you, patrons. I am very grateful. And for a show on how to navigate the difficult relationship, listen to my other podcast called Love and Abuse over at loveandabuse.com. Been doing that since 2019, and that is a very important show if you are experiencing any type of control, manipulation, or other difficulties in your relationship. It's over at loveandabuse.com. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, join the program that is helping a lot of people heal and even save relationships over at healedbeing.com. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I'm going to talk about the first segment again and a question that you can ask yourself when you're wondering if you can trust someone that betrayed you. And that is, after you've established that you want to work on the relationship, you want to try to repair things and make them better and even start trusting each other again, or you can trust that person again. One of the questions I asked was, how many times does something need to happen before you're convinced? And I think that's a great question. Another great question is, what needs to happen so that I am convinced that I can trust this person again? It's another way to ask it, and probably a better way to ask it. What needs to happen in order for me to feel like I can trust this person again? Or whatever the issue you're working on. What needs to happen in order to know that I can trust my mechanic won't con me? Or something like that. What needs to happen? That's a good question to ask yourself, because when you know the answer, you'll know when you've hit the mark. And it's important to know when you've hit the mark. If you don't know where the mark is or how to hit it, you may stay in limbo. You may stay in that rut. And being in that rut means the problems that you're having, or the bad feelings that you have, or the lack of closure, the indecisiveness, all of that may not go away until you know you've hit the mark. But if you don't know when that is or what that looks like, you may never hit it because you don't know what it is or what it looks like. So that's a good question to ask. That's something you can ponder about almost anything in life. Like, what needs to happen in order to know this is a good ham sandwich? You'll know it because you'll bite into it and it'll be delicious. Or if it's vegetarian, a meatless sandwich, whatever it is. Sometimes I run my own dilemmas in life through that question or questions like it, so that I know what to look for, and when it happens, I know I've achieved what I set out to do. Because when you know what the target is, it's easier to hit it. But if you don't know what the target is, you don't know where it is. Is it on that tree? Is it behind that tree? Is it on the ground? Does it even exist? We need to know. At least if you want closure, we need to know. I hope this helps. Thanks again for tuning in. Always keep an open mind, because that's how you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.